You're listening to the Incarcerated Christian Podcast, where we shine light on the dark side of Christianity and how it affects people and communities. I'm Robin Mitchell Stroud, and I'm here with my co-host, Deborah Levy Martinelli. We'll be covering a variety of topics, from individual survivor stories, including our own, to the influence of religion on our national politics. To learn more about the podcast, visit our website, theincarceratedchristian.com, or connect with us on TikTok and Instagram at The Incarcerated Christian, and on Twitter at @TICC_podcast_. Now, on to the show.
Welcome back for 2022 with The Incarcerated Christian Podcast. Our guest today is Pastor Jeremy Coleman. You may remember that Pastor Coleman was one of our very first guests when we launched the podcast. A lot has happened in his life since then, so we asked him to join us again to tell us all about it.
Woohoo! Welcome back, Pastor Coleman.
Well, hello, hello. It is so good to be back in the friendly confines of The Incarcerated Christian, for sure. I love this podcast. I have just fallen in love with it, just personally as a fan, and so it's been really great.
Thank you.
And I'm super, super glad to be back. So, yes, but it has been
we have done a lot.
Yeah, we've done a lot in the last year. So for sure.
Well, when Deborah and I were talking about guests for our first series of 2022, your name came up because of all of the things that have been happening with you since we last talked with you. So we talked with you, I think, last March. Your episode aired in April. At that point, you were just this phenom on TikTok with 100,000 followers. Now you have 273 plus followers, 1,000 followers. So you've grown tremendously, but it has not come without a price. And we're just curious to hear your continuing story of this journey that you've been on. And we have some questions that we sort of soft prepared. But I guess, what's been going on with you since we last talked with you?
Oh, where to start?
I know, that's a totally loaded question. But
yeah, just feet up, you know, enjoying a margarita, no big deal.
So on the beach somewhere.
Yeah. I come out occasionally, shoot a TikTok, you know, go back. No, it's been super crazy. And there has been a lot of ups and downs. And I tell people all the time, I say, you know, everybody wants to be TikTok famous until they are.
Mm-hmm.
Like it all sounds like fun and games until, you know, it's like the dog that chases the car, right? Like if the dog ever caught the car, he wouldn't know what to do with it. You know,
it's kind of
that situation. It's like, I finally caught the car and I'm like, so now what, you know?
Yeah.
So it's, you know, obviously it comes with its challenges. I think it has been really fascinating to see not only some of the support, but some of the backlash that's happened in the past year and how that's played out, not just in my online life, but in my personal life as well. You know, I am in a place now where I'm super thankful for it. I feel like I'm doing the best ministry that I've ever done, but that has come with heartache. And, you know, so, but anything hard does come with heartache, I think, and challenge, right? If it was easy, everybody would do it. So yeah, it's definitely, we'll get into it, but it's definitely been a roller coaster, to be sure.
Well, what's been one of your favorite ups? You mentioned ups and downs. What's been one of the unexpected or favorite ups?
Oh, I mean, absolutely has to be, there's a couple of things that really stick out. The first thing that I'm proud of professionally is we have an online community gathering called the Speakeasy Project.
Yes.
And it is folks who come from, a lot of them from the evangelical background, who have felt disenfranchised, pushed away, discarded by the church. They're hurt by the church. They come in with a lot of trauma. You know, we've been fortunate to get the opportunity to connect with so many of those folks. And now we have started an online community gathering. We reach around 200 folks a week. And get an opportunity to just talk about the Bible in a real conversational way. So I preach every week in that community. We have two Sunday options, a Sunday morning and a Sunday evening option for folks. And then we also have a midweek time where we just get together and just kind of chat, like just enjoy fellowship together. But the Sunday times I preach, but I've had to learn how to teach in a new way, because what we're doing is making it interactive. And so, you know, folks are able to ask questions. They're able to give pushback. Like, when is the last time you sat through a sermon and were able to push back on something the pastor was saying? But it's a safe space for that, right? Like it's a place where it's like, no, I haven't thought about that way, you know, and, you know, I've had to change the way I say things or change the way I think about things because of some really good advice from people inside of that community. And it genuinely is community. It's not a bunch of people sitting and listening to one talking head. It's genuine community where people can engage and interact. And I would pray, and I know just through talking with some of those folks that they are starting to see, and I know I'm starting to see healing from some of that religious trauma. And so that is one thing that I'm absolutely proud of in that realm, because it has just been an incredible community that continues to grow. And, you know, folks from all over the United States I was in Denver last week. I took my son to an NFL game. He had never been, I had never been. So we decided to go and it was just a special little, you know, guy's trip or whatever. But I actually got to have lunch with a quote unquote, you know, church member in Denver, Colorado.
Yeah. How fun to make that connection digitally and then in person.
Yeah, it's amazing. And so, you know, these folks have become like family, and, you know, they're great friends, and it's been so good. And it's been definitely healing for my heart. And I know, they've shared that, you know, they've experienced a lot of healing and growth through it as well. So definitely something that I'm very, very excited about, very proud of, you know, as far as community wise, it's one of the best things. So.
And that's only going to grow. We did actually check out your speakeasy projects, and Deborah and I were so impressed by the branding of each of those three different things. So fun. So good. What was the inspiration?
So clever. So clever.
Clever.
My field, I think you know this, is journalism and PR. And when Robin first told me about that, I was like, oh my gosh, I would have jumped on that so fast. So kudos to you. Great branding.
I really appreciate that. So, you know, in a past life, I worked for nonprofits here in Oklahoma City doing marketing and PR. And so, you know, it's kind of fun to get to still use some of those skills and some of the graphic design things and stuff that I've learned through the course of my, through my professional life. So yeah, it's been really good. I can't take credit though. I will say this. So Speakeasy Project was my idea. I cannot take credit for like the individual brandings of each meeting time, because actually some folks inside that community came up with it, talking about how it's collaborative. They came up with the ideas of like, this, you know, we should call it this, we should call it that. And it's all just based on like what time we're meeting and all of those kinds of things. And it's all obviously derivatives of, you know, the speakeasy idea. And so, they make life really easy.
But that's the best kind of brand development, is brainstorming in a group. The group just looks different right now. So I think you should take credit for it all, because you started it.
Well, I appreciate that.
Was that because speakeasies are like this underground gathering place? Was it? Yeah. Is that the reason? Yeah.
That's exactly. That's exactly why. And it came from this thing where I told somebody, I said, we're kind of living in, I forget exactly how I said it. I think I said, we're living in a prohibition era of common sense Christianity, you know?
Ah, yes.
Where it's like common sense Christianity is like outlawed by the religious establishment. And so, you know, you kind of feel like you're having to meet in these private settings and away from the light, sort of just to even have good conversation around the teachings of Jesus and around the concepts of what we truly believe Christianity is, because nationalism has become just an epidemic, you know? And so, anyway, that's kind of where that derived from. And it's been, you know, it's an awesome thing. And I think people just love that concept, right? Of like, it feels a little bit rebellious at the same time too. And I think people kind of like that.
Ironically, that's what the earliest Christians did, right? Meeting in people's living rooms in secret and, or just in small gatherings, sort of underground. I love it. I love it for so many reasons. It's good.
Yeah.
So I can I ask you a question about, we're going to be all over the place just because,
sure.
I have so many questions popping in my head. Going back to the evangelical, you know, like you can't, common sense, what did you say? We're living in a prohibition of common sense Christianity. There is so much you can't talk about. And if you do, the hate is so strong coming at you online. How has that been? Like what has been, I know you've had, we talked about this a little bit the last time, but since the last time you've got almost triple the number of followers. And you had so many positive comments, but you had some that were pushing back at you. What's it been like?
You know, I mean, everything, you know, just kind of like we said in the intro, right? Like everything comes with a price. And so, you know, for all of the great, I will say this, the majority of my interactions are positive. I look at the community and speakeasy. I look at the church that I have a chance to preach at in person every single week now, who hired me basically off of TikTok, which was just absolutely wild. Like never thought that would happen. So they love the things that, you know, are happening there, and they have no qualms about it, which is good. And so for all of that, like the positive definitely outweighs the negative by a landslide. But, you know, I'm definitely up on my Zoloft and, you know, and all of those things just because, and still, you know, speaking to, you know, a professional at least once a month, just because it does get heavy sometimes, you know, and y'all know I made a church transition because of kickback from TikTok, and we can get into that. I'm sure y'all have questions about it, but and I have no problems getting into that at all. And it, you know, I mean, I was working at West Metro here in Oklahoma City part time, and you know, because of TikTok stuff, transitioned out of that position. I was working at a nonprofit here in Oklahoma City doing marketing and PR, and that also got really difficult because I was doing like all of our forward-facing interviews and I was doing our social media and stuff like that. And then all of a sudden there were people getting on our social medias and our websites and stuff like that and going, oh, it's the pastor from Oklahoma. And that put them in kind of a tough spot. And so, you know, fortunately I was able to, you know, kind of transition out of that. Like I didn't get fired anywhere. But you know, fortunately I was able to take on other opportunities, and which is actually one of the positive things, I've been able to start doing this full time, which is just absolutely insane. But here we are.
You're in spaces that are super supportive, and I want to applaud you for taking care of yourself mentally, emotionally, spiritually. That's all part of our spiritual self-care. It's just all goes to our spiritual self-care. So I'm so glad that you're helping to normalize that. It's so, you know, in the church, well, we were both raised Southern Baptist, and any sort of mental health issues were deemed like you're just not praying hard enough, right?
Yeah.
Or it's Satan or whatever. And so thank you for helping to normalize good mental care and emotional care and spiritual care, clearly. But I did wonder about that. And as you said, there your positive interactions, to me, that just indicates how thirsty people are for a brand of Christianity that is loving and accepting and, you know, like not judging. Your brand, or like your motto is still, what is it? Love God and people passionately, no strings attached. Yeah. I still flippin' love that so much because I still follow you really closely on social media, and you embody that. And I think that's what people have gravitated toward. It's just, we all want to be loved.
Yeah. You know, yeah. Absolutely. That's absolutely right. We all want to be loved, and we want to find places that truly accept us for who we are and who God made us to be. And, you know, I fully hope that those are the spaces that we're providing for people.
Can we go back to a minute for a minute to something you said a few minutes ago. There I go, having a little trouble verbalizing today. You called Christian nationalism an epidemic. And it's kind of in lockstep, in my view, with the COVID pandemic. So much has happened.
Oh, interesting.
Along those two lines that sort of track. Do you agree with that?
Well, I think obviously the situation with the pandemic has, you know, kicked some of this nationalism into hyperdrive. Let's make no mistake. Christian nationalism has been here from the very beginning. So it didn't just arrive on the scene with the pandemic, but which I know you obviously know that, but I think what we saw is a really bad cocktail, Trumpism, that ended with the pandemic, and all of that just ramped up this absolute insanity. And so, you know, I do think that those things go hand in hand. We got a lot more people at home with a lot more time on their hands, and they're doing all their research on, they're scared, and they're doing all the research on Facebook, and no matter what end of the spectrum you fall on, your immediate response is to, you know, get your quills up and be defensive and to fight for the things that you passionately believe in or whatever. And so I think it has ramped Christian nationalism up quite a bit. And that's the reason I think that the pandemic has been so politicized. I rarely say this, but I'm going to say it. I was thankful for former President Trump this past week coming out and saying that he was boosted and that Republicans need to quit lying about being vaccinated and boosted. Not very often do I get to go, oh, I enjoyed something Donald Trump said, but here we are, you know, maybe hell froze over. I don't know. But I was a little bit shocked, but I was like, yeah, absolutely. Call those guys out. And so, you know, and then now, you know, of course they don't want anything to do with that, but it's just sad that something that the health of not only ourselves, but our neighbors and our families has become so politicized. Mm-hmm. And so I think it is, it's another big log on the nationalist fire. And it is just another place where they can, you know, dig their feet in and refuse to do things that are going to be genuinely helpful. And that's harmful to watch, but it's sadly, I'm just going to have to say it's par for the course.
Mm-hmm. Well, and that made me think of when you were talking about that, and my comment about people being afraid. You know, people are, some people have lost family members, some people have lost jobs, everybody's been impacted, we're all a little scared. And one thing we know is that fear shuts down the thinking part of your brain. So it's really effective. And so I think that lots of evangelical churches have fear as sort of the foundation, like we're all scaring people into following Jesus instead of incentivizing them to follow through love. It's like we're scaring them through fear, judgment, and punishment. And so it feels to me like it's just a double whammy. So you've got the structure that's set up normally, and then you add to that an additional layer of real deep fear. I mean, no wonder everybody is like losing their minds in this time.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. Is you know, and everybody's tired, right? Like, this has been almost 2 years of this that we're kind of, you know, start stop as far as, you know, well, numbers are going down, so maybe we're getting back to normal, and then no, you know, and so it's just been really difficult, and I don't wish that on anybody. Like, I think it's just been hard for everybody across the board, no matter where you fall on the spectrum. I think it's been hard. And so, you know, we all want it to get back to normal. We all do. But the let's just live our lives and, you know, faith over fear is not getting that job done. It's just not doing it. And so this continues to drag out because there are people who continue to refuse vaccination. They continue to refuse to wear a mask. They continue to refuse to social distance. All of these things that are just so basic. And it's not, you know, we're not asking for the blood of your firstborn. Like it's not insane. It has been really difficult to watch, but you know, those on the extreme right want to get back to normal just like anybody else does. And so we have common ground there. I can appreciate that. but let's do the things. Obviously this, well, I'm just going to do what I'm going to do is not working. So can we please just get vaccinated, wear a mask for a little bit, and then all of a sudden we can beat this thing and we can get back to normal. And then we can get to arguing about, you know, the stupid stuff that we used to argue about before that was just not that big of a deal.
Right.
Like, let's get back to that. It's costing American lives and it's, you know, I mean,
yeah. Listen. It's impacted our communal health and sense of well-being. Speaking of your stance on vaccinations, you have quite a few videos up because, of course, your wife is a trauma nurse. Is she still doing trauma nursing?
She is. She's a traveling trauma nurse. So she's gone about 50% of the time.
Oh, bless her.
And yeah, so she's awesome. She's a hero, like a for real one. And so I've often told people, like, if she ever got on TikTok, you know, the world would kind of stop because she's super witty, super funny, and really, really educated. And so, you know, I talk a lot about, you know, healthcare and stuff like that, just because, you know, something very near and dear to our house. I also talk about anti-misogyny and how men yes. need to get a little bit better. Mm-hmm. Just because I live with a very strong woman who is an incredible, independent, you know, fierce woman and is changing the world. I truly believe that. So, you know, with all of that said, it definitely helps drive my content. But if she ever gets on TikTok, I'll be old news real quick.
Well, and I know you joked the last time we talked that she's not even on to see your own content, which just cracked me up at the time.
So she has an account now.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. She has an account now. She has it to be a viewer, not a creator. But I keep threatening her. I say, hey, you know, here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to out your username. And then I'm going to say, hey, if we can get her to, and I keep asking her, I say, how many followers do you need before you create content?
And oh, so yeah,
I'm trying to get her to say, like, you know, oh, 10,000, something like that. Cause if I think if I put that out, like the, you know, the pastor from Oklahoma squad is just going to go over there and show her all the love and she'll wake up one morning with like 30,000 followers and not know what to do with herself.
Oh, so. For sure. I've no, like in the first hour.
Yeah. Yeah. It would be a lot of fun.
Oh, it would be like a challenge. But I do want to ask you, because that made me think when you were talking about the misogynistic, I was super curious about you. So you have videos on, well, I mentioned the vaccinations. And of course, the last time we talked with you, we asked a lot of questions about your videos on, you know, misogynistic, I don't know, the misogynistic structure of Christianity, but also pastors and the racism and the homophobia and all of this stuff. And then more recently, I think you've done some more on why people are leaving the church, the evangelical church. Which videos do you get the strongest reaction to, positive or negative? Which ones are people reacting to the strongest? That's just a curiosity question.
Yeah. So usually, you know, usually some of my reaction videos, like if a pastor says something really crazy or does something really crazy from a pulpit.
Yep.
If I'll take a clip from that and react and just kind of share my perspective on that, I typically get a lot of engagement from that.
Yeah.
And it varies.
Like the It's What She Was Wearing video that you did a couple of days ago. But those are the kind of people I grew up with. I can't tell you how many times I heard that sermon.
Same.
Well, yeah. Let's hear a little bit. Can we get a little context on that particular video?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
I don't remember if you're talking about the one with either Pastor Bill Reeves, who recently had so I had done a video about him about 2 or 3 weeks ago where he had talked about a single woman in his church, about 25 or 26, he said, from the pulpit, who was asking his permission to get her hair cut. Not her dad, not her, like, just her pastor, right? She was just a church member asking permission to get her hair cut because she wanted to make sure to keep her male leadership in place for, you know, the things that they belonged in, right? Yeah, which I've never told my wife what to do with her hair. Not once. In her, you know, she comes home and I go, that looks great.
That's perfect because I used to, my hair used to be dictated. So that's the right response. Yeah.
Oh, wow. Mm-hmm. Anyway, called him out for that. And I said, look, you know, this is misogynistic. And the reason that I do that is not because it's like, hey, look at this idiot up here talking about telling the women in his church to cut their hair a certain way or whatever. It's because where there's smoke, there's fire anytime. So if this guy's up here saying that kind of stuff from the pulpit, what is happening behind the scenes? Well, it comes out a couple of weeks later that she's an 18-year-old kid. There's an 18-year-old girl inside of his church who was working in the daycare. He had held her paychecks from September to December, like several months worth of paychecks, put a tracking device on her car and stolen her laptop and her cell phone, her personal laptop and cell phone. And so, you know, there's obviously a lot of questions out of that. Like, why are you tracking her? Where do you want her to go or not go? And so I think that there's a lot of, you know, especially in those fundamentalist churches, they are building and creating cultures of abuse. I mean, it is absolutely cultures of abuse, you know, and so many of these pastors, like, I think the video you're referring to was, you know, so many of these pastors talking about, you know, that what women are wearing is suggestive, and they're, you know, I mean, they're implying that they're tempting asking men, for it. Yeah, absolutely.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so my biggest challenge on that is, and I've even kind of changed in the last year or so how I address that. I direct my content when it comes to that directly at men.
Yes. Thank you.
Because first off, I'm not a woman. So it is not like, I don't understand that feeling. I have never been told what you're wearing is, you know, causing your sisters to stumble. Like, that's something I've never heard.
Right.
Right.
And therefore the sin is on you.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. So, mm-hmm. So I'm not being told that, but what I do know is that my sisters are being told that, which is absolutely terrible. It's misogynistic. Right. It's horrible. Yep. And the problem is that is men admitting, I cannot control my sexual desires. I am an animal. All I can do is just grab and, you know, whatever. And it's so far from what we are supposed to be as maturing and growing men. And I have a major, major issue with that. And so what I want to normalize is I want to normalize appreciating the beauty of women without sexualizing the beauty of women.
Yes.
I want to normalize appreciating the professionalism of women without sexualizing the professionalism of women. Right. So if we can learn how to better, and if men would get better in our culture to take responsibility for their actions, for their hearts, and for their thoughts, then we would be in a much better place. So she doesn't need to change what she's wearing. You need to change the way you're thinking, because she didn't ask to be sexualized by you.
Preach. Preach. Yes. Oh, that's so good. And this is what I love about your videos. And I know that we talked about this the last time. I love that you just take this stuff head on. I love that you place responsibility back on the men, because those things are so deeply traumatizing to women in the church. I mean, I you can ask Deborah, because I mean, I'm still this way. Growing up, I was covered. It's like, this, with the exception of a cheerleading skirt, you know, like, I was covered and I was still hearing that message. And then you place the added burden on of like, well, if a man is lusting for you, it's your fault. Like, this, his sin is on you. It's like a double whammy. And I didn't know enough back then to say, that's not on me. And now it's really important that we have men saying that message to other men. So I want to thank you yet again. I know I thanked you in the last time we talked with you. It's really an important message, really an important message. And that is the video I was thinking of. But you've featured more than one like that, where it's just, oh my gosh.
Yeah, it's sadly a lot.
And there was one that you also featured. I can't remember. Well, I remember the gist of it. The gist of it was, you know, women, make yourself sexually available to your husbands. And I don't subscribe to that either, because I think that can be deeply, deeply traumatizing. So in that video, you also sort of took it on. So I just want to thank you for that. That's very awesome.
Well, I think that the thing that I have learned is I make no mistake about it. I have had to grow and mature through this. My wife would be the first one to tell
you. But you have.
That, you know, because I grew up indoctrinated in that fundamentalist culture.
Yeah, right.
I had a really bad idea of what a partnership should look like, what a marriage should look like, what sex inside of that marriage should look like. Because here's the thing, what purity culture teaches men or boys, because they're teaching kids, right? Like,
yeah, it starts early.
Yeah. They start indoctrinating kids with purity culture in middle school at churches. And what they're telling them is they're telling boys, hey, you know, look, don't go out and have sex, you know, try and save yourself for your wife. Like, if you make mistakes, it's cool. Just start over. Like, it's fine. But here's the thing. When you get married to that, you know, to that girl or whatever, like, she's going to be like your personal porn star. Like, you are just going to have sex all the time. It's going to be absolutely amazing. You're going to love it. Like, and she's just going to be, you know, she's supposed to be submissive to you because you're the leader of the home. And so, you know, you want it, you get it, whatever. Well, on the flip side of that, and then it's okay, boys, let's go play dodgeball, you know, right? On the flip side of that, they're having very intimate and deep conversations with our young women of the same age and telling them things like they're holding up a flower and saying, every time you give yourself away, you know, you're giving a petal off this flower. Do you just want to give your husband a stem, you know, or, you know, your virginity is like this piece of gum. Once it's been chewed, nobody wants it anymore. You know, I mean, disgusting things like that, right? So what we're indoctrinating those young women in that same exact time. So what we've invested in those young men is, when you get older and you get married, you are going to have your own personal porn star. Your life is going to be amazing. You're going to do and get to have whatever you want. What we're telling those girls in those same exact formative years, because now we're creating neurological pathways in that time, right?
Right.
We're creating mm-hmm. auto yep. responses during that time.
Yep.
So boys are like, yeah, heck yeah, I can wait. Like, I'll wait for that. That sounds amazing. What we're doing on the flip side of that is we're telling little Susie that if she gives herself to anybody in any type of way, that she is disgusting and she's discarded. She can no longer be restored. She's nasty. She's useless. That no man would ever want her. And that, you know, don't do that. Or churches are not afraid of saying hard things in those situations and looking at girls and saying, you know, you don't want to be a whore, do you? Right. So they invest those into middle school and young high school girls. These girls are now creating auto responses and neurological pathways to go, okay, if I have sex or think about sexual things or want to do sexual things, I am dirty. I'm less than. I'm disgusting. I'm not good enough. And then what happens? Damaged goods. I'm just a chewed piece of gum. And then what happens is that little Johnny and little Susie get married. Well, little Johnny's ready to rock. Cause little Johnny has been told, this is your time to shine, Johnny. Like, she is all yours now. Right. And so, and then little Susie's like, I don't know what, she's scared to death. She doesn't know what to do. She can't get out of her own head. Why? Because she has been told her entire life, this is bad. And you're evil for this. And you're gross for this. You're disgusting for this. You're going to be, he is taking the best part of you. He is taking it away from you. And even if you're married, like, how do you even overcome that? And that is the reason, especially when I do premarital coaching, one thing I warn couples about, especially who grew up in that purity culture, is, you know, out of the three things in America that cause the most divorces internally of a marriage, not talking about like extramarital affairs, right? But internally of a marriage, there are three things that cause the most divorces inside of a marriage. In reverse order, it is children, money, and number one is sex. People get divorced constantly over sex. And the reason is because a man thinks he's not getting enough sex and he's not getting what he should and, you know, this kind of thing. And, you know, the woman is obviously like frustrated and scared, at times repulsed because of the attitude of her husband or the actions of her husband and all of these kinds of things. And so, the other day I put out a video and I just said, hey guys, you want to get laid? Stop worrying about getting laid. Do me a favor. Start putting out emotionally, spiritually, and mentally for your wife. Start doing things for her without any expectation of return. Just love her, meet her where she's at. You know, and the rest is going to take care of itself because in a healthy relationship, healthy things happen, right?
Yeah. I did like that video.
It took a very, very long time for me to get to that point. But you know, it, I can guarantee you, these guys who are so worried about having control and whatever like that have to let that go. They have to let it go. And it's just, it's toxic.
Big, before you ask that question, I have just one quick follow-up to what he said, which is—
So do I, but you go first.
When Clarkie and I did our premarital counseling with our pastor, the pastor asked us to write a list of 10 things that we were looking forward to in our marriage or not, or we expected from our marriage or something. Sex was near the top of Clark's list. It wasn't even on my list. And that was so like, wow, it wasn't even on my list. I mean, I was just like, wow. But when you've had all of the training that you're talking about, you can't switch that with just the words "I do." It's like, you just can't. Okay, over to you, Big. Sorry.
That's okay. That's okay. I just wanted to follow up, Pastor Coleman, on your story about your transformation in that area and how you came to believe a completely different reality. You said it took a long time. Was there within that time some aha moment, some turning point for you?
Yeah. So, and I think it was more toward the end of that time, you know, so I would ashamedly say that topic was a point of contention in my marriage for almost a decade. You know, we got married really young and I had grown up in a fundamentalist culture. Full transparency, my wife and I have never been with other people. We waited for each other and we did what the church said do and all of those kinds of things. Right. And so I was just under an assumption, like I'm leading my household. Like I went straight from high school into Bible college and into ministry. Like I was a student pastor, the freshman, my first semester of my freshman year at college. So like I went straight into ministry and was just engulfed in it. Right. And so I just remember, you know, it started a lot of fights. It started a lot of, you know, discord. I was angry. I was frustrated because I was under this assumption that, you know, like all of these desires and this libido that I had pent up were going to be answered just in, you know, the blink of an eye. She was frustrated and scared. She saw things in me that honestly rightfully scared her. You know, I shared this on a video and this is something else. I think we need to normalize pastors talking about how they are not good at things, right?
Yeah, right.
The more that we hear from pastors saying, I was bad at this, or I really messed this up, or I was really, you know, whatever. I think the more authentic it's going to feel and people are going to gravitate to that. But, you know, I put out a video saying, you know, I was emotionally abusive at times in our relationship because I would, you know, I would get so mad. I would slam things and I would throw stuff across the room and I'd bang the wall and, you know, all of this stuff. And, you know, obviously I grew out of that as I started to realize, number one, that is no way to treat a woman, period, by any stretch of the imagination. But two, also, you know, as I started going to counseling and learning how to deal with, like, you know, coping mechanisms and things like that, of just how to handle my anger instead of going off the rails. So all of that was really important. And I think what started to happen in that process is I was also starting to get an insight into her psyche of how she was thinking about things. Right. And so it was this aha moment of like, men are so selfish when it comes to sex. They are so selfish. And it was like, I wasn't asking questions like, you know, what's good for you? Like, what do you enjoy? What helps you get you kind of that place? Like, like what gets you in the mood? Like, what are some things that I do that meet your love language or whatever the case is, right? You know, I ashamedly was not asking those questions. I think I started learning to ask those questions and our marriage started getting better and better and better.
Jeremy, also, women aren't taught how to voice what they need there. It's like a double, it's both sides. Men aren't asking and women don't voice because right. We've been taught not to do that. Yeah.
Yeah, 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 yeah. That's a good point. That's a really good point. I hadn't thought about that perspective either. And that's such a good point. And so I think it's a recipe for disaster, right? And it's why these things cause so many divorces, because it's communicated poorly. Everybody has expectations, but the expectations don't match. And nobody's saying, like, here's how we can come to common ground where everyone is getting what they want and need out of this marriage. Right. And so it was definitely challenging. and it took a lot of growth. And I don't know if there was like a, if there was a big aha moment more than it was just kind of a steady uphill, gradual learning and appreciating my wife for who she was, appreciating her body for what it was, appreciating her personality for what it was, and truly just defragging and decluttering all of that toxic thinking and all of that internalized misogyny. Like I would have told anybody from, you know, I'm not misogynist. Like I don't hate women, whatever, but my actions were showing different. And so what I had to realize is that it's just like with racism, right? Like as a white man in America, there are always things that I'm trying to learn. It is a process because I do not have that experience of being a minority in this country. So I can say that I'm an ally, but if I say I've arrived as an ally, I'm wrong. And so the same way is true. I can say I'm an ally of women and, you know, fierce, strong, independent, you know, feminist women. I can say I'm an ally of those things, but if I act like I've arrived, what I'm really doing is just being misogynistic. And so one thing I definitely really try to do is just to continue to always introspect. And so I realized I just had a lot of internalized misogyny, things that I was really harboring and acting out in and you know, treating in particularly my wife less than. And so it was definitely a process. But here several months ago, in the last 2 or 3 years, like we have gone through that process and our marriage is as great as it's ever been. I mean, it's just absolutely amazing. But when the Gabby Petito thing happened, I remember we were laying in bed and we were talking about it. And this was one of those moments when I was reminded. Oh, go ahead, Robin. Sorry.
Well, she's the one who disappeared in her. Is it her fiance that had killed her? Is this who Gabby is?
Yeah. So it was big national news. Like
okay,
they had gone hiking a few days before. Like there had been a couple of police reports where they had been physically, you know, violent towards each other. I guess like one time the police had been called on her because of her actions. And then like a couple of times with him and, they had even gotten pulled over with a domestic issue, like on their way to this camping trip or whatever. And apparently it was extremely toxic and there was just lots of problems. And then she didn't come back. Like she had, and you know, the medical examiner, I think said she had been strangled to death. And so, okay. And then he committed suicide.
All right.
Yeah.
Thank you. So, for that. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. So we were just talking about that because it was just really big in the news at the time, which I would be remiss if I didn't stop and say what's really sad is, you know, she went missing in, you know, Montana, Wyoming area, and how many hundreds of indigenous women go missing in that area every single year. And why are they not plastered all over the news, you know?
Right. Yep.
So we really need to look at our racism in our country in that way. But kind of back to this was, you know, my wife, and this was a moment where I was acting like I had arrived as an ally, forgetting where I had been. Right. Well, why did she stay? Why did she stay with him? Like, you know, she knew he was abusive. She knew how dangerous he was. You know, she should have just left, you know, this, that, and the other, the whole thing. And I remember my wife looked at me and she goes, well, I didn't.
Oh, wow.
And I was like, but I'm not the same. She goes, you can say that. She goes, but I know what kind of fear that little girl had. She goes, because when you're banging the table and hitting the wall and carrying on, she goes, and this is the one that really stuck out to me. And this was the aha moment, which I feel like we had arrived to a place of like really great respect before this, but this was a moment when the path became clear, right? Like I had done this journey, but it was like step by step by step by step. This is when the lights came on and I looked back down the hill. Okay. She looks at me and she goes, I didn't think you would ever kill me, but I knew you could.
Wow. That is powerful. So what was it like having that mirror held up to your face?
Oh, it sucked. And at first, like, I kind of like, not in the same way I had in, you know, in my earlier years got defensive, but I was like, what? I would never hurt you. And she goes, I didn't know that. She goes, your actions were just like his. Like, you know, you were angry. You were, you know, throwing a temper tantrum. Nobody could calm you down. You know, you're yelling and screaming. And she goes, and I didn't know when one day you would decide that the wall wasn't good enough.
Yeah. Wow.
And I just, and so this was the processing for me, right? Is that earlier on in my marriage, that would have sent me off, right?
Yeah. Right.
But thank God for therapy and medication and growth and, you know, good people to speak into my life. I just remember looking at her and going, I need to sleep on this. And I just roll over and just go to sleep. I'm like, hold on, time out. And so I get up the next day and I just thought about it for a long time. And it was this moment where I was like, she's right. And how many girls, how many women are in situations where they're scared to death in the same way? And it's all because these men who say that they respect women, say they would never touch women, but are doing emotional damage, which is right. just as dangerous, yeah. right? They're doing
and damaging.
They're
doing heart. Mm-hmm.
It is just yeah. as damaging, just as if not more, yep. right? Because then it's yep. not as it, yep. then it's not obvious, right? People can't help, right? And so anyway, so dangerous. But I appreciate y'all letting me share that for sure, because I think we need to normalize that for men.
I do too. And also the other thing that you're normalizing is, you know, what you're describing in our language is religious miseducation. And it's the miseducation of the, you know, the boys and men, and it's miseducation of girls and women. And to kind of, you can't learn until you unlearn. And so that process that you're talking about is a process of unlearning before you can even get to that point of then learning new ways or relearning. So I thank you for that too, just giving us a moment to be able to say that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Absolutely.
I think it's necessary. And that's such a good point, Robin, is, you know, that process of, you know, it's the defragging first.
Yeah.
Right. It's getting yeah. rid of all of that, that false teaching and that false knowledge, and then it's refilling those holes
yes.
with the right stuff. And so a lot of people yeah. think that they just automatically switch to the right thing. And that's not how
no.
that works. And so I appreciate you saying that, because no. that's a really good point.
It's a process and it's by degrees. Oh, Deborah's telling us we only have 5 minutes left. She's the timekeeper. Boo.
Sorry.
Okay. Well, I have a couple things before we let Pastor Coleman go. One is just kind of silly, but you're getting more playful with some of your content on TikTok, and I am yeah. flipping loving it.
Good.
The Evangelical Hotline was I cannot even tell you. We're gonna cut that in so our listeners can hear it. I was laughing so hard. That so I don't know what is inspiring this kind of playful content, but I am all for it. It's so good.
Thank you for calling the Evangelical Hotline. How can I help you? Yes, and who is your church provider? Constitution Freedom Baptist Church. Okay, and what were your coverage questions? Can you carry the Love Your Neighbor policy and the Let's Go Brandon policy? Absolutely. So the Love Your Neighbor policy is only going to apply to your white middle-class suburban neighbors who voted for Donald Trump. It does not apply to immigrants, any person of color, anyone who kneels for the national anthem, anyone from the LGBTQIA+ community, anyone who has been vaccinated, anyone who doesn't put America first, anyone who doesn't watch Tucker Carlson, anyone who isn't registered Republican, or anyone who doesn't own an AR-15. Okay, great. Thank you so much for calling. And don't forget, love the sinner, hate the sin.
And then what was the inspiration for that?
No, I was just going to say, I have kind of been trying to like diversify some of my content a little bit, partially because, you know, it just gets heavy, right? Like sometimes yeah, when you're just yeah, directly yeah. talking about like the really heavy topics all the time, like sometimes you're like, man, I just want to have fun with this. So, the Evangelical Hotline, which so I've got another good. One of those coming. My sister actually came up with this idea, so I'm excited about that one. You'll enjoy
good
that.
Good job,
one,
but, sister.
Yeah. And then, you know, doing like the, you know, the country song, like hot takes or whatever.
Those are funny. Those are good. Yeah, those are good.
And so actually the Brandon song is going to be out on iTunes and Spotify soon. And so I'm working with a production company in Nashville. I actually just got the track back this week.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, they reached out to me and they were like, we definitely want to record this. And so anyway, been working with them. And so that'll be out later this month for pre-save. And you can also make it a ringtone. So that'll be a lot of fun.
Oh my God, hilarious. And you did just a snippet of that, right, on one of your TikTok videos. And by the way, we're going to link all of his social media sites for our listeners.
I wrote that in like 10 seconds. I was just being silly. When it was a day when I was like, this is so heavy. Like, I need something that's a little bit just more lighthearted, right? Like, I still want to say some things. But
yeah.
So I just wrote it super quick. And then recorded it just being silly. And then it took off. And when it took off, people were like, we need a full version. We need a ringtone. We need a whatever. And a guy that's been following me for a really long time that I've connected with a few times, I didn't know, but he owns a small production company in Nashville. And so he reached out to me and he's like, hey, we can help you out. So we're finishing up that process this week. And it's been a lot of fun.
That's incredible.
Yeah,
so deserving too. So good. I have two more very, very quick questions. Do you have something before I go there, my big?
No, I'm going to let you roll. Go.
And then you'll close this. She's so good. She keeps me on track. Otherwise, we'd be talking forever. Given the year that you've had, I'm curious what church means to you now. That's the first question. And I think they're both kind of in the same vein. And also, maybe has it changed you the way that you do your spiritual practices? And if it hasn't, then maybe the second question is, what is one of your favorite spiritual practices? So what does church mean to you now? And a favorite spiritual practice?
I think church just, it continues to mean community, but I think the way that community looks has changed in the sense that it's extremely inclusive and includes people from all different backgrounds, all different walks of life, all different worldviews. It's just extremely inclusive in the sense that, you know, we're all sitting down at a table together, having good conversation about life and experience. And so it feels a lot more like growth, I think, than what it did before. So it has definitely changed. And like I said, even as a pastor, the way I preach on a Sunday morning has completely changed. It's very interactive. It's connected and which I love, and it's challenging. So I think all of that's good. So professionally, it has changed as well. Spiritual practices, I still keep a lot of the same disciplines. You know, I still read scripture regularly. I still pray regularly. Something that has taken on a deeper meaning, we did. Several folks asked for a communion service at the end of the year. So for Christmas Eve, we did a communion service online. And there was something just really beautiful and genuine about it, right? Like it was natural, and it we had people who had never been a part of a church, and then we had people who had, you know, just left the church because of church trauma and stuff like that. And so it was just good for that connection.
That's awesome.
So lovely to have you back and to learn about all the wonderful things that you're doing in a different way. It's fantastic.
Fabulous.
Well, I'm super grateful for both of you and just this podcast is bringing some really great things to light. I learn a lot from it. I enjoy it. Your guests are always amazing. And then just the hospitality, like this just feels like home. And so that's the reason you had posted something toward the end of the year on your socials about, you know, just a quote I had made, like, you know, and you were doing a review of the year, which I thought was really great. And anyway, so that's, I text Robin because I was like, oh man, I just miss them.
Thank you. I know, so great. We definitely learn so much from our guests. And it seemed very natural to do a retrospective when we were taking a break over the holiday. So easy because your stuff, oh my gosh, it was, we had too many things that we could have listed, but we were, you know, trying to spread the love. But thank you so much. This has been, when you went to answer the door, I mouthed to Deborah, this is so fun. Like, this has been so fun and so, like, nourishing to my soul. So thank you.
Well, I'm
grateful. It feels like you again. Home to us,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, it sure does. Good.
Being with you feels like home.
Appreciate it.
Well, I appreciate you having me on, and always available for y'all anytime you need me.
Sounds great.
Thank you for listening to the Incarcerated Christian Podcast. We invite you to rate and review our show. And remember, you can find this interview and others on our website, theincarceratedchristian.com, or anywhere you access podcasts. Don't forget to connect with us on Instagram and TikTok at The Incarcerated Christian, and on Twitter at TCPodcast_. You can find more information about us and our show on our website. Again, that's theincarceratedchristian.com. Until next time, go forth in love and light.